The pros and cons of Facebook. The social media giant Facebook is in the news this week, but that's not really news. It seems Facebook is in the news every week. Right now, the focus is on a new book titled Zucked and written by tech investor Roger McNamee, outlining what he sees as some of the dangerous choices made by the Facebook executive team. Over the past year, we've heard about the Cambridge Analytica scandal, the spread of hate speech on Facebook, the company allegedly covering up evidence in the Russia scandal, and hackers accessing the account of 30 million Facebook users, to name a few. But Facebook remains a powerful marketing tool for many small companies and an important way for many people to connect with friends and family. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we discuss Facebook. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Facebook has had a scandal-filled year, and the questions over what it does with user data has prompted many people to say they're done with Facebook altogether. Today, we're going to talk about the pros and cons of this huge social media platform and what its future might hold. Joining me in the studio, Amanda O'Brien. She is a business owner and digital marketing expert, and she's organizer of the Social Media Breakfast Maine. Rich Brooks is founder and president of Flight New Media, a digital agency in Portland. He also founded the Agents of Change, a conference and podcast focusing on social and mobile marketing. And he's the author of The Lead Machine, the Small Business Guide to Digital Marketing. And joining us from our Bangor studio, Judith Rosenbaum, who is Assistant Professor of Communication and Journalism at the University of Maine. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you thought about dropping Facebook? Have you found it to be useful for keeping up with friends or promoting your business? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Judith, let's start with some simple history of where it all started. For anybody who hasn't heard about Facebook's early days, tell us how and when it began and then bring us up to speed. How did it get so big?
So Facebook started, I want to say 15 years ago at Harvard University, when Mark Zuckerberg decided to connect all of the people in his class through an online platform, kind of like they used to have yearbooks. He decided to make it interactive and live so that people could create profiles that they could adjust and connect with friends. It quickly became available to people at universities all across the United States. And a couple years later, it became available to anybody with a basically an internet access point. And it just exploded from there. I mean, I think right now about 68% of Americans are active on Facebook, and it's become incredibly popular. Even people over the age of 65 who are usually not likely to adapt to new technology that quickly have really taken to Facebook. And it's just become this, you know, this monstrous part of our social lives that's become hard, as you've said, to really live without, if you will. It fulfills so many roles that, you know, you might send emails. Now you might send somebody a quick message through Facebook Messenger. You might do your yearly Christmas letter. And nowadays you just have Facebook status updates. But also if you want to find out business hours or a review for a company or anything like that, people turn to Facebook. So it just fulfills a multitude of uses that people used to get from other places. And now it all comes from this one app.
Mm-hmm. From other places or not at all. I mean, I think a lot of us have connected with people we might not have continued to connect with throughout our lives, old friends from different places, correct?
Exactly. And that's kind of the power of Facebook, is that it serves like this organic yearbook. You know, before, when I graduated high school, you said bye to each other and that was pretty much it. You might see each other at your 10th reunion or your 20th reunion. And now I'm friends with people from 7th grade whom I found through Facebook. So it's this really powerful way to connect with people from a long time ago and from really far away whom you might have otherwise lost touch with. So for me, I went to international schools as a kid, and I was able to connect with a lot of my friends from those days thanks to Facebook. So it's not all negative. It's offered us a lot of opportunities for, you know, connectivity. And at the end of the day, we're human beings and we're all highly social creatures. And Facebook really fills that need.
You know, we are highly social features, but Amanda, I know a lot of people are also really concerned about privacy. You just did one of your breakfasts about privacy. How concerned should the regular Facebook user be about privacy? And when we talk about privacy, what is it that we're giving away or potentially giving away?
Sure. Yeah, that is definitely a major concern and topic right now that everyone's trying to pick apart. Unfortunately, Facebook is also trying to pick it apart at the same time that we are. So with Facebook being so readily available and there's no barrier to join other than an email address, you don't have to pay to be a part of it. You, as the user, become the product, the advertising to make the whole system work. So what are you giving up by joining Facebook? You are giving up some of your privacy. Your Facebook will know when you check in to a place, it knows you're there because you told it it's there. We also tend to tell Facebook our relationship status, where we live, where we went to school, where we work. So now it's building this information about us. They're using that information to then also infer other things about us. And from there, it gets a little tricky because as they're trying to be better for advertisers to send more targeted ads, which is how they make their money to make this whole system work, what are they sharing with those advertisers? Are they sharing, you know, and people get very concerned, are they sharing my credit card information or, you know, where my house is located?
And what are they sharing with advertisers? Because I think a lot of people, let's face it, will say, look, if Facebook knows I'm looking for a new pair of wool socks and they send me an ad for wool socks, I don't really care. But it's the concerns are way beyond that, aren't they?
They are. They're way beyond that. And we're seeing how that impacts everything, how it impacts our country and who we have for our president. Like a lot has been impacted by what we're telling Facebook, what Facebook is inferring and what they're showing us and how we go on day to day with that.
What they're showing us on our feed.
Right.
Rich, I want to bring you into the conversation. I'm not going to make you walk us through every scandal of the last year.
Because we don't have time for that.
No,
anyway.
We don't have time for that anyway. But I'm thinking to myself, as I was studying up for this program, thinking, was Cambridge Analytica really in the last year? I mean, that seems like a couple dozen
scandals ago. Yeah. I think, you know, just to build on what Amanda's saying, I think it's obvious that when we use a free tool like Facebook, that we are the product, as she was saying. And I think people have to go into that understanding that you're giving up a little bit. The whole thing with Cambridge Analytica and some of these other issues, like one of the ones that really frustrated me was finding out that my private messages were basically an open book to Netflix. Even though I happen to love Netflix, they have no business in my private messaging.
So Netflix was knowing what you had messaged to your friends on Facebook Messenger.
It was possible. Like Facebook had some companies that they had positive relationships with, kind of like good friends in the business industry, and they would give them access that they wouldn't give other people access to or other businesses. And one of the ones that just stuck in my mind was the fact that Netflix had access to people's private messages to find out like what kind of shows they might like, and they could make decisions based on like whether they renewed Daredevil or not or whatever it might be. And I was just like, okay, I get that I'm giving up some of my privacy so that it can use this amazing platform. But what is totally not okay is you then taking things that are called like private messages and sharing them with different companies that then are going to try and pitch me on different products. In my mind, and along with Cambridge Analytica and those kind of things, that's not okay. We had an agreement, me and Facebook, and that agreement was, I'll tell you where I check in and I'll tell you like that I like these things and you'll show me cool stuff and you'll alter my newsfeed so it's more enjoyable and you'll keep me connected with my friends and family. I get that, but then they overstepped their bounds and they basically did what I feel is pretty much illegal, if not certainly immoral, in terms of giving my personal information to companies that didn't have any right to it.
And this is the case even if you thought you set your privacy settings and so, you know, that only friends could see things. You didn't fill out, as Amanda was mentioning, you didn't say what college you went to. You don't put what town you live in. It still doesn't matter what your privacy settings are. Facebook still has access to it, and Facebook still might be sharing it.
that seems to be the case. Plus what they were doing, and this seems to have been peeled back a little bit, but Facebook also bought a lot of huge databases and had had relationships with companies that sold or handled huge amounts of data. So as marketers, we could go in there and find out, like, well, who's going to move in the next 6 months? And let's sell them on our house moving services. They could collect that kind of data, and still can, and help marketers or businesses market to those people. And they felt that that's a totally okay thing. But that's another issue where they're taking huge amounts of data, putting them together, and getting frighteningly realistic pictures of who we are online.
So many places to go with this conversation. But Judith, I want to follow up on something Rich just said. And he said, possibly illegal. I know that Mark Zuckerberg, the founder and CEO of Facebook, has been brought before Congress this year. What is possible? What is possibly illegal? And what could possibly change? What could Congress make Facebook and other social media outlets do differently?
Well, the issue and the point made by Mark Zuckerberg also is that Facebook right now is seen as a conduit, right? So it's seen as a platform that provides us with content. It is not, it is a platform that allows other people and other organizations to provide us with content. So
sure, they're the paper, not the paper that the newspaper's printed on, not the content. I see. Go ahead.
Right. So one of the problems that we're seeing when say we talk about, the Russian interference in the election by spreading information on Facebook, is there's little you can do about it because Facebook claims, hey, we are just the conduit. When it comes to collecting data, some of the incredibly scary things that Rich and Amanda mentioned just now, is I think it's important to keep in mind that a lot of online companies do this. Anytime something is free, you know, be it your Gmail account, be it Facebook or Instagram, which is owned by Facebook now too, we have to realize we are the product. And anytime we are the product, that means they are going to sell information about us. And so right now, there's little in terms of strict legislation about that. You know, we like to encourage companies to do well. We like to encourage companies to grow. And so I think Congress is hesitant to put limitations on that kind of thing. Although right now, with all this pushback, with people saying, excuse me, I did not sign up for you all to share my, you know, my Facebook messages with Netflix, there might be some action. But again, I don't know, because what we see is a lot of legislators and scholars as well still point to people's personal responsibility. You know, ultimately, they argue we as users should be aware that everything we do and say online could be shared with third parties, especially if it is a free service like Facebook, where we are the product.
All right. Well, we've been talking a lot about some of the scandals and some of the privacy issues. But I know, Amanda, you're a digital marketing expert. You work with small businesses and tell them how to use platforms like Facebook to their benefit. It's not all bad.
It's not all bad. It's actually a lot of good as well. So it still is the best platform right now to find new customers or to stay in front of your current customers, because everyone's on Facebook. So I was thinking of, like, when I was in college and in a marketing class, there was like, you know, you sell golf clubs. Where do you want to sell your golf clubs? Do you want to put out an ad in the USA Today? Do you want to put something in Golf Magazine? And now we have an option that you can send ads directly to someone who's checked into a golf club in the past year. Like, you can send very targeted ads to people who want to hear from you and are more apt to engage with you or to buy your golf clubs for a price that most small businesses can still afford. You can do it for like dollars a day.
So how does that work? If a small business wants to target somebody using Facebook, they just contact Facebook and say, I want to find out who in Maine has checked into a golf club in the last year. And
sure,
Facebook will provide them with that information for a price.
Yeah. They have a very robust advertising platform. So you can go in and through your business page, and you can find people who say that not only that they like golf, but maybe someone who's been to a golf course in the past year, between a certain age range, lives in a certain area, and deliver ads to them, and fun ads. Like, they can be pictures, they can be videos, they can be slideshows, and it can cost as little as couple dollars a day. And then my favorite part, being a nerd, is you can get the analytics to that, how many people actually did it. So my background in marketing started in print and then to radio. And then with digital, I can see 100 people saw this ad, 5 people clicked on it, 1 person bought the golf clubs. Like, and that's information that you couldn't get before.
And just to clarify, so it's not like Facebook says Jennifer Rooks, you know, checked into this golf thing. So you, it's just you get a number, a sense. You might say there are 1,000 people in Maine who qualify, who would see this ad. And then you can go ahead and place that ad and Facebook will show it in their news feeds. You don't know who's actually on the receiving end of that. But as marketers, then we try and get them to a place where they're going to buy a product or fill out a form. And that's how businesses end up collecting more information. But it's not like they're handing out names.
So the businesses are not handing out names. Go ahead, Judith.
I was saying, and to play the devil's advocate, I'm sure a lot of people listening are going, oh my gosh, I can't believe they're sharing all this information about me. But how practical is it when you're, say, shopping for a new pair of boots to get ads for boots that you can then click on and then to be able to go on Facebook and do research about who owns what kinds of boots and what store? So it is very convenient. I'm not saying I'm in favor of it, but it does make our shopping experience a lot easier.
If you'd like to join the conversation about Facebook, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We've talked about the benefits for small businesses. Are there small businesses that might want to stay away from Facebook for some reason?
Well, there's always a great social media horror story that you can point to. I mean, there's certainly small businesses that maybe have thin skin and don't respond well to criticism, especially in a public way. And we've definitely seen small businesses jump onto Facebook or similar platforms and maybe say something political. I'm for Trump, I'm against the wall, whatever it is, and immediately alienate a huge part of their population. So I think you need to just be careful when you get on these platforms. Yes, you want to be engaging and you want to be quote unquote yourself, but at the same time, you can run into problems by saying the wrong thing. And there's certainly a lot of small businesses of all sizes, actually, that have been attacked because of something they said or that they didn't say or a bad experience that somebody had in their restaurant or store.
I talk to a lot of small businesses come into it with a lot of fear. Sorry, Judith. Come with a lot of fear of like, what if someone says something bad about us? What if someone leaves us a bad review? And my point of view is I would rather know that. I mean, if they're not putting it on Facebook, they're telling all of their neighbors. Like, so this time you have a place where you can get the notification that someone's done that and you can respond. And then the world could see that you did respond. I have businesses that like they did have a manufacturing problem and they didn't know until they started getting reviews on Facebook. They looked into it and they were right. Like I would want to know that.
Judith.
Right. And what I was going to say is a little of what Amanda touched on also is that people use Facebook to engage with others. So as a business, you need to be willing to engage with your customers. So when you get a bad review, that's okay as long as you respond to that review. And like Amanda said, address it. So if you don't have the time to engage with your customers, then maybe it is not the place for you. But if you do, it could be a really good resource of information about what your customers think and what they want.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Maine Masonic Charitable Foundation, supporting Maine Public Radio's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine. And the Waterville Opera House, presenting A Fox on the Fairway, a play about love and golf. January 25th to February 3rd, operahouse.org.
Scientists are collecting better data about our changing climate. Now there's a push to use it for early warnings about dangerous floods, wildfires, even outbreaks of dengue fever.
It gives you 4 months' notice. If you've got 4 months, think of all the things that you can do in 4 months.
I'm Ari Shapiro, using climate data to protect people from climate impacts, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Coming up today at 4 here on Maine Public Radio.
Hey, this is Elsa Chang from All Things Considered. Public radio is a partnership. NPR and Maine Public Radio bring you accurate news, intriguing interviews, and thought-provoking conversations 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. In exchange, we ask that you consider making a contribution that helps support it all. Whether you donate $10, $20, or $100 a month. Your support encourages public radio to grow. And when public radio grows, it can do more to help you grow. We grow together. Here's how you can get involved.
Super Thursday is coming up on February 7th, but you can contribute right now at mainpublic.org or by calling 1-800-866-1475.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, pros and cons of Facebook. Joining me today, Judith Rosenbaum, who is Assistant Professor of Communication and Journalism at UMaine. Amanda O'Brien, digital marketing expert and the organizer of Social Media Breakfasts. And Rich Brooks, founder of Flight New Media and the Agents of Change, focusing on digital marketing. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I'm going to start with an email. This is from John. I was a Facebook user for many years, but a few months ago, I largely abandoned it because I noticed two dangerous effects it was having on my life. First, the amount of time I spent on the platform gradually was increasing to an unhealthy level, crowding other activities out of my day. Not without reason does a friend call it Wastebook. Secondly, I was becoming exasperated with the apparent stupidity and gullibility of some of my friends on political matters, and I realized that Facebook and other social media are perniciously exacerbating the polarization of American society by displacing deep thought, reason, and personal conversation. My quality of life was deteriorating, and I decided to cut the diseased tissue, Facebook, out of my life. My friends know how to reach me if they want to. I think John brings up two really, really good points. Which one do we want to talk about first, Rich? The wasting of time or the what's going on politically?
I may need to get out my thesaurus, first of all, just to understand all the words he used. Obviously, he's a vocabulary expert. We can talk about either one. I mean, I was mentioning before, there was a study that recently came out. It was mentioned in the New York Times today where they took a group of students, I believe they were, one-third stayed on Facebook, one-third agreed to go off Facebook, and another third were paid $100 to get off Facebook for a month. And one of the outcomes was at the end of the month, people were a little happier, those who got off of Facebook. They were happier than those who stayed on Facebook. But the other thing is they were politically less aware. They didn't know all the news that was going on, but they were less partisan also in their beliefs. So I feel like Facebook has this aggravating factor where it makes you more left or more right depending on where you started at the beginning. So I'm not surprised that that John or Bob was having these issues with his friends, because people tend to just become more extreme on Facebook because it is a little bit of an echo chamber. Because of these algorithms, Facebook continues to feed us things that they think we'll like. So if we lean a little bit left, suddenly we're only seeing left-leaning politics. And the same thing, if you lean a little bit right, suddenly everybody seems to be, for President Trump. So you just need to be aware of those things.
Yeah, I think that if we go back to that concept of this is a free platform, so we are the product, which means Facebook makes their money by showing us ads. So yes, you can get totally addicted because Facebook is trying to get you to be addicted, because the more times you check them, those little tiny red notifications, the more ads you're going to see and the more they can report to their advertisers that we get this many impressions. So they're trying to find ways for us to want to check it regularly. So he is totally right. And then as for the happiness part, I mean, I think we all should be in control of what makes us happy as much as we can. So if you are not getting happiness, if you're not connecting with people and it's making you feel good, then jump off. You can do that.
And Judith, what about John's point about how he was becoming exasperated with the apparent stupidity and gullibility of some of my friends on political matters? It sounds as though he was getting frustrated with people who believed fake news.
Right. And so that made me laugh a little bit, because those people exist off Facebook, too. It's not like somehow we turn into these uninformed, illiterate people when we're on Facebook. It's just Facebook makes it more visible. It's just like people have a tendency to say this leads to polarization. Facebook causes polarization. We don't really know. It could be that society is a lot more polarized and Facebook is just rendering it more visible. you know, people who are uninformed have always existed. Facebook just makes it more visible. I mean, think about it. I'm friends with my neighbor on Facebook. When I see him on the street, you know, we'll talk about, I don't know, shoveling snow or whatever, football, you name it. But when we're not going to talk about politics, but I might see what he thinks about politics on Facebook, which makes me aware of a side of him that I might have otherwise not seen. So again, I'm always really cautious with attributing all these effects to a platform, because ultimately it's us humans who create the content. That's not to say that Facebook can't have negative consequences. I mean, we have seen studies that have shown that the use of Facebook can be linked to mental health issues, especially in younger adults, right? But to say Facebook causes this or Facebook causes that, ultimately it's us, you know, men and women, the people who use Facebook, who make that, who create that, if you will.
John, thanks for that email. We'll go up to Waterville and Ellery. Hi, Ellery. Go ahead.
Yes, Jennifer. Thanks again for a wonderful program. I'm calling about a general question in some respects. The controversy several months ago, a year perhaps, was metadata regarding telephone company data. Now, Facebook data, considerably more detailed. Now, when privacy settings notwithstanding, when we set those settings, can we actually have a sense or expectation of privacy, considering we accept the agreement and we're putting our life story out there? Can we really have any expectation of a privacy?
No. I'm just going to say no. I'm sorry, but we are the product. And sure, there's terms and conditions, and you sign an agreement and Facebook promises to do X, Y, and Z. But as long as we're not paying customers, how many rights can we expect to have? Now, does that mean that it's moral or ethically responsible what they're doing? Maybe not, but they are a business and their bottom line is money. And maybe I'm being too negative here, but there you are.
I think you can mitigate some of what goes out there. But again, the more you use the platform, the more you connect with your friends and family and exes and people you went to college with, the more Facebook knows about you. And so you can set your privacy settings to high, and that will definitely limit some stuff. But mostly my feeling is that those privacy settings protect you from other people on the platform, not from the platform itself and not from the advertisers of that platform. I think there has to be understood that it's a social contract that you're entering when you use any of these platforms. And I think that's what's frustrating to a lot of people, is they don't realize, because they haven't read the 64 pages of terms of service, what they're actually giving up by joining in with this network. But this network is more than half of the people on the planet Earth. So it's a pretty hard network to ignore. It's difficult. Like, you can be with a group of friends and have a great time, and then you go home and people are posting photos on Facebook and continuing that conversation, continuing that event. But if you're not on Facebook, then you've stopped being part of that community at that point.
Ellery, thanks for your call. Go ahead, Judith.
I was going to say, and Rich touched on a very important point, namely that ultimately it's up to us to decide what do we put on Facebook, right? Do you want to share that picture? Do you want to tell them? Do you want to check in with this business? There was this article, I believe, in the New York Times a couple of days ago about sharenting, right? Social media parenting. So the tendency of new parents to share all their firstborn pictures on Facebook. That is a choice that you make, and then you're trusting the platform to protect that, but forgetting that you are the product. So I think that we as users need to be very aware of what do we put on this platform.
I'm waiting for the first case of a child suing their parents for sharing too much and probably scarring them emotionally for life. I give it 6 months at tops.
It's a thing.
So Nora posted on Facebook, and you know, it's interesting we're having this conversation because Maine Calling uses Facebook, and the reason we use it is this is an interactive program, and this is a way of reaching out and, as you all both said, connecting with our listeners. So Nora wrote on Facebook, "I live in the wilderness, and yet I can chat to many people I have known for years on a daily basis, something I never had before. Friends, not just ones who always want something from you or are too busy to visit. The internet is a good thing, but there are many nasty people in the world who want to ruin it for others."
Yeah, I had a similar, like, thinking about this show, I had a woman in my life who is important to me who lives kind of like off the grid in the woods, and she wrote a post like, how amazing is this? That like I can just check in when I want and see what the people I care about the most are doing, how their kids are doing, and then I can go back to my little space. And it was just like, yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I love seeing the pictures of my friends' kids, mm-hmm. And you know, concerts and dressed up for prom and things like that. We're going to go to Paula, who's calling from Wyndham. Hi, Paula. Go ahead.
Hi. So, having to do with marketing, a colleague, a coworker, was talking to me about a product that we both had an interest in. I am not her Facebook friend, but we have Facebook friends in common. And I was nowhere near my phone, which is my Facebook thing. And all of a sudden, that product popped up on my phone like 5 minutes later.
Paula, I am so glad you called. I know so many people have had this experience that they were talking in real old-fashioned conversation with someone about something and not in front of an Alexa or something like that. And suddenly an ad pops up on their feed. How, digital marketing experts, does that happen?
I hear this story all the time. It's happened to me a dozen times. And maybe I'm being naive, but life happens. So it's like I've had other situations where I've thought about somebody and then half an hour later I run into them on the street. That is not retargeting. So I think that some of this is just...
it's coincidence.
There's a lot more coincidence in this world than we're willing to admit.
There you go, Paula. Go ahead,
I'll
Judith.
I'll be a bit more of a... I'll be a Grinch here a little bit.
Okay.
You know, so you've all probably heard about the facepalm bug, the FaceTime bug that allowed people to hear you speak while you were FaceTiming them, but they hadn't answered yet. Because I've had this happen too, and sometimes I wonder if there is a bug or maybe an on-purpose activity that when you're near a phone and you're talking, somehow it picks up on what you're saying. I don't know. Again, I'm probably being way too much of a Grinch here, but I do wonder about that. I wonder too on this one.
Yeah, I wonder too. I mean, I think that there's the is this tracking more than we think it is, or to what Rich said, is that like just an observation like bias? Where now that you've thought of something or we're talking about it, like there it is. And of course, you know, I was just talking about this Jeep Grand Cherokee, and then you know what? That actually kind of makes sense for my age and my lifestyle, and like that is kind of a car I would see ads for. So,
Paula, thanks for bringing this up. We'll go to Linda from Falmouth. Hi, Linda. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I'm calling because I've gotten I've had three or four different friends send me a post on Facebook that talks about privacy and says that I have to click on this. It's right in there. It says it was on Channel 13 in New York. And it says that my deadline is tomorrow.
Linda, I'm going to cut you off because I need to let you know that Amanda is sitting here in the studio shaking her head.
No, you don't need to do that. No.
In fact, you probably ought not to.
You ought not to click on that. Yes, you probably should not click on that.
There you go. There's the answer to your question.
Yeah, anytime that comes up, I tell people to go to a good, air quotes, old-fashioned, like, Google search. Like, just see if you can find this off of where you're seeing it and find someone who can validate that this is a real thing.
If that is not a 2019 thing to say, a good old-fashioned Google search.
Big air quotes. I know.
Thank you, Linda.
Like our grandparents used to do.
We'll move to John in Wiscasset. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for doing this program. It's very interesting. And I was going to make the point about the TV stations carrying the Facebook and Twitter at the back on the bottom of their screens, you know, just because they want to keep the business. They went right into this media and allowed people to use it, obviously, as you say you do for your own purposes. But I stayed off all of this. Well, I used Twitter a little bit. I stayed off Facebook, and I started a few years ago before the big political debate here. I started telling people I was smarter than 2 billion people because there were 2 billion people on Facebook. And then somebody told me not long ago that you could be smarter than 2 billion people in this world and still have a low IQ. You see, there's about 7 billion people in the world, something like that. But I'm wondering, is there any reason to go on it today?
I think just for the reasons we've talked about, I have ambivalent feelings about Facebook personally. I think there are some bad things about it. We've talked about them. But, I mean, like we were talking about, I have connections with people and I stay in. Last night, a family member shared something with a group of us in a private group that he created for our family that he was able to quickly get that information out to all of us. It would have been very difficult to get it out any other way. I also get to see how my friends' kids are growing up, which is nice as well. And I have the opportunity of traveling around the country and speaking in different parts of the country and meeting people. I probably wouldn't stay in touch with them, but by becoming Facebook friends, I am able to keep those quote-unquote weak links alive. And that just gives me a good feeling when I go to a new city that I'm already going to know a half dozen people there that I can connect with in real life.
John, thanks so much for your call. We're going to take another quick break. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Evergreen Home Performance, helping homeowners address climate change with energy audits, window replacement, and insulation. More at evergreenyourhome.com. And Diversions Puzzles and Games, committed to offering fun, social, and technology-free ways to connect. At Hannaford Plaza by Main Mall and diversionsgames.com.
This year's State of the Union has been delayed, but is the ceremony past its expiration date? The Constitution requires this report, but not the event itself. This annual address can appeal to our highest ambitions. It can also seem like a televised catfight. The State of the Union Address. End it or amend it? Next time on 1A.
You can listen to 1A tonight at 9 here on Maine Public Radio. And coming up today at 2, City Arts and Lectures. Pediatrician Nadine Burke-Harris, founder of the Center for Youth Wellness and author of The Deepest Well, Healing the Long-Term Effects of Childhood Adversity, talks about how exposure to violence and stress affects the developing brains and bodies of children.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, what does the future hold for Facebook? Joining us today, Rich Brooks with Flight New Media, Judith Rosenbaum with the University of Maine, and Amanda O'Brien, who runs Social Media Breakfast Maine. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Hannah calling from Portland. Hi, Hannah. Go ahead.
Hey, yeah. So personally, I still really enjoy Facebook in that I can stay in touch with friends overseas. But I'm also in a band in Portland, and many of my friends are musicians. And it's felt like Facebook has changed a lot over the last couple of years. When they started kind of targeting bands, making them become businesses on Facebook, and then they charge for advertisement. And it feels like as soon as you choose to go down that road, it's hard actually for your real friends and family who would usually see your posts to see them unless you pay for the advertisement.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, bands are like every other thing that's not a person. It's a business page on Facebook. And as an entrepreneur, I have that same struggle where Flight or Agents of Change are now business pages. And for people who don't know, a couple of years back, you posted something as your business and 80 to 90% of the people who liked you would see it. Now that's about 1 to 3%. So as a company, a band, whatever it is, you're going to have to pay for that visibility. I would just advise you that as soon as you post something as your band, that you personally go and you share it because you're going to have the connections with those people anyways. They care more about you than your band, but they'll see where you're playing and you'll still get the same results without having to spend any money.
And if you're a friend of somebody who has a band and you share it, you're helping their algorithm, right? You're helping it get shared with even more people, correct?
Absolutely.
Hannah, thanks for calling. I'm going to go to Janice calling from Somerville. Hi, Janice. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, Jennifer, and to the panel. I've decided to get off of Facebook just for all the reasons that have been talked about and then some, but I'd like to know the way to do that that will eliminate the information I've already given to Facebook, or is there a way to do it?
Judith, that's a great question, isn't it?
It is. So Facebook has its own process for deleting your account, which I'm sure you've looked into, right? You have to go through that process on Facebook and then not log in for a certain number of days, because when you do, Facebook will assume that you want to come back. If you hit delete and then not log in for, I want to say it's 30 days, your account has been deleted. With it, all the information has been deleted, at least on the user end. Clearly, this data is stored with Facebook somewhere, and whether they delete it, that we don't know. You know, that's kind of the black box of Facebook. It's been stored on their servers, and chances are that's where it's going to stay. It will just not be visible to you or to any of your friends.
The other issue with that is, according to the GDPR, which is the European Union's law about privacy, you are allowed to ask companies to remove all your data. Now, I have not had anybody talk to me about going through this process since GDPR has come into effect. But if that were the case, there should be a setting that would literally let you pull all of your data off Facebook, and so that they wouldn't even have access to it. Whether or not that tool is in place, I don't know.
And would that only be for people in Europe?
No, because companies that do any business in Europe have to abide by those rules. And we can go down a whole nother, this could be a whole nother episode, just about like what businesses in America have to do, even if their websites show in Europe, even if they don't do business in Europe.
Janice, thanks for your call. We'll go to Matthew calling from Bangor. Hi, Matthew, go ahead.
Hi, Jen. How are you?
Good.
Good. Just wanted to say 2015, I started a Mini Cooper Club on Facebook. It's called Minis of Maine. It's a way that many Mini owners across New England, we can get together, talk about our cars. We do get-togethers, little rallies. And it's been very positive, very productive.
So you like it?
Could never have done it without Facebook, for sure.
I did something similar. I got a puppy. I got a Vizsla puppy, and they are crazy, handsy, energetic dogs that can tend to bother other dogs when you play with them. So I started a group of people who have the same kind of dog, and we would go on these walks together. And I met, they're going to be lifelong friends. Got dog advice, got to ask, so instead of going to the vet, we're all posting, oh, this is on my dog, what is this? And people have answers and referrals, and I think it's great for finding those like-minded or lifestyle people that you wouldn't have found otherwise. I mean, if you're driving your Mini Cooper, the best you had before was to wave frantically, ooh, I'm one of you, but now you can connect with them and ask advice and get together. It's great.
Matthew, thanks for your call. A tweet. The majority of internet users simply do not understand privacy on the internet. There are few who understand how targeted advertising works, the psychology behind it, or just how much personal information is given without your knowledge. Private messages, location data, pictures, etc. Location data, that's one that always gives me the creeps a little bit. Go ahead, Judith.
And that is extremely scary, too. I do not check into stuff on Facebook, but I do know that just by carrying my phone around with me, one of my apps will know where I'm at. And I think that that tweet raises a really interesting point about the importance of digital media literacy, right? So in schools, we teach our kids math and how to read and write and Shakespeare. And maybe we should also teach them about these things. I mean, people are spending hours per day on social media without truly understanding what their digital footprint is, or even how to interpret some of this information that's coming at us, and the fake news. And again, this is a whole nother topic. But in order to be able to digest and to critically evaluate all the things that you see and the choices you make, I think we need to really train people in how all that works and how to best navigate that so that it benefits them.
I agree.
We'll go to Mary, who's calling from Casco. Hi, Mary. Go ahead.
Huh, great. How are you? I'm still in favor of Facebook. I use it a lot. I regret that I do think it's sort of choosing my friends a bit, because I have several good friends who are not on it, and they sort of slide out of my consciousness because I don't keep up with them the way I do with other people, which is kind of a shame. I don't answer any of those quizzes or those silly things. I assume those are data gatherers. I also do it for my business, so I appreciate Rich's work very much, and I found his book, the most understandable, digestible book on how to use social in business.
Is this my mom?
I've never read. No, your mom told me to call. I mean it, Rich. Honestly, I really have enjoyed it very much and found it very useful and comprehensive. So thank you very much. And for the businesses I use Facebook for, we have determined that it's not as much a sales tool as a community tool. And it absolutely expands our community and keeps people interested and engaged. and as part of our audience. We're not specifically using it to sell. We're using it to retain. And I do it for my church, which, you know, has activities and stuff going on, and it's just kind of fun and easy, and I like it for sharing photos. So all in all, although I'm careful, I think, about what I disseminate, I still appreciate it as a social tool.
So. Sure, and Mary, I think you're speaking for so many people. I mean, there's a reason it has 2 billion users. People really enjoy sharing. They really enjoy connecting. And I guess I think everybody who uses Facebook has some understanding that they're giving up some privacy, that maybe somebody's finding out they just had a newborn baby or just had a puppy or drives a Mini Cooper. Judith, I want you to talk, though, about why this is so controversial. Why is this worry about privacy a really serious worry?
Well, there's 2 thoughts jump into my head, so let me try to not make them come out at the same time here. But so on the one hand, you know, what this does is this touches on 2 aspects of us as human beings. We are avidly social creatures, like I said earlier. But at the same time, we also really value our autonomy and our privacy. We want to be able to make decisions about who knows what and who says what about us. Facebook offers us the ability to be extremely social, but at the same time, it also takes away that control. Right. So this controversy touches on 2 values that are equally important to most human beings. Right. And at the same time, when we use Facebook, and most of us do, and a lot of us find it, like we see from all these examples, very useful, we give up so much control and we don't know what they do with it. And we don't have really any recourse. I mean, think back to all the scandals, Cambridge Analytica, the interference in the election. There is nothing that we as citizens can do to undo that. We have no way to come back at Facebook other than to walk away from it. And when we do that, we lose out on all these opportunities to connect, to promote our businesses, and to be the social creatures we want to be.
An email from Sarah: nearly 2 years ago, it occurred to me to start looking around for a Facebook group for endometriosis, which I have been suffering from since I was a teenager. I'm 33 now. Through such a group, I was able to learn of a relatively unknown treatment for the condition and of a specialist that practiced in Maine. 1.5 years after my surgery, my symptoms are gone. Finding that group was a literal life changer. And for better or worse, I can thank Facebook for that. My question for you all: is there anything emerging to rival Facebook if people are uncomfortable with Facebook? Is there somewhere else that 10 years from now we're going to be using as the same kind of social media platform that connects us to one another without these concerns?
So what's interesting in that is that a lot of people have said, oh, I don't do Facebook. I use Instagram. Well, guess what? Facebook now owns Instagram, too. And recently they announced that they were going to actually unify the underlying technical infrastructure of Instagram, WhatsApp, and Facebook. So there might be a completely new platform on the horizon. But if they're going to have 2 billion users, wouldn't it be reasonable to expect that they might suffer from the same issues that Facebook does if money making is the bottom line?
And I can't find it right now because we have so many emails and tweets. Oh, here it is. Email from Ron. Can your guests address not only Facebook and privacy, but Google and Amazon sharing personal information as well?
I think right now all of these platforms are making their money off of us. I mean, Amazon maybe they have other ways of making money. But the bottom line is, yeah, they're making money because they know so much about us. And this is an ongoing problem with all tech companies. It's interesting that Apple has kind of fought against this and say your privacy is so important to us. Of course, there's also the FaceTime issue that's going on right now that they didn't report in time. So I think all these companies have a ways to go to really respect our privacy.
Yeah, I think that what Judith was saying, too, with, you know, Instagram being bought by Facebook, is we are in this interesting place where if something new comes along, Facebook, Google, Amazon will buy it. Like, they'll acquire it and make it part of their group of products. So it doesn't feel like something's going to come out of left field that we've never heard of and be its own independent piece.
Although nobody saw Facebook coming either, so who knows what the future will bring.
Who knows?
What would you all, if anything, like to see the executive team at Facebook do differently?
I think something that's been creeping up three or four times in these conversations is the concept of, to what we were just saying, if we have these businesses that are, we are their product, and if something else comes along, they're going to buy it, we need to have a way to regulate that, that they cannot at this time, they have not shown us that they can self-regulate how these things happen. And I'm not saying that's even their fault. It's just so fast. Like, how would they ever have a plan in place for the things that they're doing? When Mark Zuckerberg was in his dorm room, he in no way thought he would be in 15 years sitting in front of the entire government and talking about Russia. And like, that's, well, that was not part of the plan. So I think they're going as fast as they can, but I think we need to find a way, like, who is going to manage all of this, and who is going to educate the public on what privacy is and what is and what is not okay? It seems like they cannot do that at this time on their own.
I remember reading.
I would really.
You go on, Judith.
Go ahead. Oh, I think it would be really wonderful if Facebook, like some of the major media corporations, like National Public Radio, for instance, started viewing themselves as a purveyor of content more and took that responsibility seriously. And I might be Pollyanna-ing here, but it would be really neat if they had some sort of ethics board or a team that considered the ethical implications, the responsibility that comes along with the important role that they play in our society today. Like I said, I don't think it's going to happen. It's a very, you know, optimistic view, but I think that that could make such a big difference.
I love the ethics idea for sure. I guess one of the things that I had read about is blockchain, which is basically an electronic ledger that's supposed to be unbreakable. That one of the ways blockchain was being used is to take your own personal information, and then you would basically use an electronic key to unlock Facebook, share your personal information, and when you logged off, you would basically take all that information with you. So they couldn't use it except when you're on the website to connect with all your friends and families and that sort of thing. And I think that there might be some opportunity there as well if we can't rely on the ethics board in Silicon Valley.
Okay. Well, thank you all so much. This conversation went so quickly because it was so interesting, and I apologize to everybody. We had to leave hanging, but the hour's up. So thank you all for joining us. Amanda O'Brien, a business owner who organizes Social Media Breakfast Maine. Rich Brooks, founder and president of Flyte, and that's with a Y, FLYTE, New Media. He's written a book about digital marketing. And Judith Rosenbaum is assistant professor of communication and journalism with the University of Maine. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. We had help from George Thomas and Rich Tozier in Bangor. You can find past editions of Maine Calling at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be rebroadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, The Month in Review. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.